Our Father, which art in heaven, we are grateful this day for the many blessings that thou hast given to us. We wish to thank thee for this beautiful weather that we are having, for the weekend that we have had to relax and to enjoy the Sabbath day. We pray for thy Spirit to be here now with us today as this body meets and discusses those things of importance to this beautiful state. We ask that thou will bless them with the knowledge and the understanding that they have to be able to put it to use for the benefit of the citizens of our state, that as they debate the various bills before them, that they will be able to have thy Spirit to guide them and direct them in the decisions that they have to make at this time. As they discuss the budget bill this week and throughout the session, bless them that they will be able to be aware of the needs of the citizens of our state, and that those things will be passed that will keep us in line with the statutes as they are today, that they will be able to be of benefit to us. We are thankful today for our loved ones as we celebrate this Valentine's Day. Pray especially for those who are away from their loved ones and for those who are serving here. And bless their families, bless their wives and their children, that they will be protected and that they will be blessed while they are away, and that they will know of their love for them. Father, we are grateful for all these many blessings. We're grateful for the service that these individuals of this body make and give to us throughout this session. And be with them, we pray, and do it in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in pledge.
I pledge to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports at the Journal of February the 11th, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Our doctor for the day is Dr. Scott Deering from Gillette. Our nurse of the day is Ann Rega from Campbell County Memorial Hospital in Gillette as well. On this day in Wyoming history, Niobrara County was created in 1911. On this day in U.S. history, in 1899, voting machines for use in federal elections were approved by the U.S. Congress. Senator Nicholas, would you like to have privilege of the floor at this time?
Thank you, Mr. President, I would. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll begin the budget and after third reading. There are some things that if you want to gather up to be ready for the when we begin the process, you'll be getting a cheat sheet that will be in your bills. You'll have Senate File 1, which is the bill itself. That's 2. If you have your, if you want to have your budget out, this is the supplemental budget. You won't have time to read the whole thing while we're doing it. We'll be going too quickly. But if you want to have it out, that's a third thing that you may want. On occasion, we may refer to the data fact book that came out, which is the budget document. If you keep handy your Craig estimates, your Craig, the green book or the green sheets, and probably the January Craig, although it's not a bad idea to take a look at October Craig too, and then your most recent goldenrod, which will be the golden sheet. So if you have your goldenrod handy, your green sheets, the Craig report, your bill and the cheat sheet, those are the kinds of things you'll want to have available for you. Mr. President, the way the process works under the present rules is that in first reading of the budget, there are no amendments other than the amendments that come from the committee, which are corrective in nature. And the reason for that is pretty simple. It wasn't to prevent you from making your amendments. Rather, it was designed to get the explanation of the budget done in one day, or in a regular session, it would be 2 days. Generally speaking, we try to time the budget so it begins on a Monday and we're done by Friday. So in the budget session, we would take 2 days to give the explanation, Monday and Tuesday. Then your amendments need to be in to the staff before 5 o'clock. Now, that gets a little bit dicey for second reading if our explanations go beyond 5 o'clock. So, you know, the idea is we'll start the budget early. But as you're, if you see areas or you want to have amendments on during today, be thinking about it, because you need to get your thought down and give the amendment to the staff. The reason we do that is because before we were having staff, people were taking amendments at 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock, in Senator Myers' case, sometimes midnight, and lots of them. Now, if you want an amendment, you want to get it to the staff before 5. That doesn't mean you have to use the amendment, but it means that you have to have the request for them to draft it by 5. So you could still work on the amendment afterwards and through the morning. Second reading will be, our assumption is right now we'll finish today on the explanation. We have an extra day available if something should change, and if Majority Floor Leader thinks we can get it done today, we should push it to get today. It's important generally that we don't take the budget over the weekends, because if we go over a weekend, if you want to see what the word lobby means, take a bill over the weekend, and you'll find out what it means. So we try to get it done during the week. So our hope is to finish the explanation today. Tomorrow will be second reading, so if you want amendments on second reading tomorrow, then please get them to the staff by 5. Second reading is tomorrow, and then we take a day off. And then you'll have, so the day off as we're presently planning will be Wednesday, and once again you have all the way till Wednesday at 5 to get your amendments. The only persons allowed to draft amendments on Thursday morning, the day of third reading, is the chairman with consultation with the minority floor leader, and the only reason the chairman would do that is if we saw there were enough amendments that we couldn't balance our budget. And we start going back and say, okay, you guys have spent too much money. Now we've got to come up with a plan to have a balanced budget. And so those would be the last amendments, budget balancers. I don't foresee we've never had that problem recently, and so I don't expect it to happen. But once again, your amendments for third reading need to be in by 5 o'clock on Wednesday night, and then third reading presently is planned for Thursday. Mr. President, that's just the process we'll be following through, and then we'll begin to do the explanations after third reading.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, one question just to make sure we're clear. When you say the amendments have to be in by 5 o'clock, does that mean a draft has to be to the attorneys? Staff attorneys, or does it mean that the final amendment has to be approved by them?
Senator Nicholas?
Mr. President, we've been interpreting it to mean that simply you have to have the budget or the draft request to them. And what we would request is that, obviously, the more complex the amendment, at that point, we're simply saying, remember, folks, these amendments take a lot of time, particularly the complex ones, so try to get them to staff earlier just because it's easier on the staff. But we've not construed that you have to have it in finalized. And, in fact, there have been many instances where members had 3 or 4 amendments on the same topic and didn't make their decision till the following morning, that's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Seeing no other questions, we'll move on. Messages from the House.
February the 11th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 304, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 18. The House conferees are Representative Semlick, Chairman, Representative Eklund, and Representative Dan Zwanitzer. Patricia Benska and House Chief Clerk. You want this back?
Concurrences?
Goes over to Pat.
Senator Perkins. Are you ready for message number 289? Go ahead, Senator.
Message number 289, concurrence requested to Senate File 15 and ask the body to vote no. What we have in this case...
Senator Perkins, let's have the clerk read that in.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
February the 10th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 289, conferees requested. Mr. President, Senate File 15, Court Jurisdiction. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 39, noes 20, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Now, Senator, would you like to move the concurrence?
Sure. What I just said, Mr. President, the move message number 289, concurrence request to Senate File 15 and ask the body to vote no. What we had in this bill was joint judiciary interim bill that came through. What we did in this bill is it passed out of here. We had a robust discussion. This was on the court jurisdiction. We had a robust discussion about what that ought to be, and we had decided that we wanted to maintain $50,000 as the move the circuit court jurisdiction up to $50,000 and then keep small claims where it was. The House expanded that initially up to $100,000 and then also increased the other circuit court, the other small claims court jurisdiction. What I'd like to do is see if we can get that back to where the position was. If you remember our discussion, Mr. President, we were trying this out. If we get too aggressive with it, it affects not only the judges but the workload of the clerks. And in addition, as we move more jurisdiction to the circuit courts, if we also simultaneously raise the small claims court jurisdiction, then we'll squeeze our circuit court judges at the bottom and the top. We'd like to go back and visit with the House, see if we get them to recede back to the Senate position, which was the committee bills that came out of a joint interim committee. So with that, we'd ask you to vote no. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, the motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 289 and that you vote no. Chief Clerk will please call the roll. Okay, go ahead, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, as I read what the House did with the third reading amendment, they increased the small claims jurisdiction from 5,000 to 6,000. They raised the other jurisdiction, the circuit court, from 50 to 60. Mr. President, my instinct is that the House is not going too far on this, that their change with the third reading amendment is entirely reasonable. And if they do good work, let's agree with them.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would urge you, the body, to vote no on this concurrence. Folks, this was an interim topic that... the history on this was that your joint interim committee in looking at interim topics last session, at the end of the session, came up with the idea, and then lo and behold, we also heard that the courts were also engaged in that. And then it became a collaborative effort. And it is a delicate compromise involving the clerks of both courts. And the more you mess around with what we did do, which I think was substantively good, the more you get pushback. And believe me, I've already gotten some pushback already. This is new. It is important to try to streamline our process. But by the same token, I believe that the House and what they were doing was not within the spirit of that compromise. I urge you to continue to maintain our Senate position. I really do believe it is the appropriate way to go.
Any other discussion in regard to this concurrence on message 289? Okay. The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate file 289, and you've been asked to vote no. Chief Clerk will now call the roll.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Martin?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fleitern?
No.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 2 ayes, 28 noes.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate file 15, message 289. The conference committee is Perkins, Christensen, Esquibel. Senator Case, are you ready for message 294? In regard to Senate File 20, Election Code Reversions, reading clerk will read that message in, please.
February 11, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 294, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File number 20, Election Code Revisions. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, excused 4. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move message number 294 on Senate File 20, Election Code Revisions, and ask the Senate to vote aye. Mr. President, our good friends down the hall, by and large, made very little change to this bill as it left the Senate. There is one small area, and all the amendments deal with this small area. And it actually has to do with how a vacancy is filled when by a municipal government for a position of town council. And the gist of it is on page 14 of your engrossed bill, there was some language that has been removed and does not appear in, I meant the engrossed bill as it left the Senate, Mr. President, not the blue copy that you have here. So missing from the blue copy is a section 2223308B, which talks about vacancies and nomination for municipal office. And what that language in statute says is that a vacancy and nomination shall be filled by the municipal court notifying the person who received the next highest number of votes at the municipal primary election as shown on the official county canvas, or if no other candidate exists, the vacancy and nomination may be filled by the governing body of the municipality. That bill, as it left the Senate, said a vacancy and nomination may be filed by
the governing body of the municipality. And the reason that the, really the gist of that is it became permissive, that a municipality didn't necessarily need to fill a vacancy that occurs. And the thinking was if the vacancy occurred shortly before the election, there was no need to fill it and then have it be filled by the voters at the election. But frankly, that's a very small piece of this bill, and we've been getting along without it for probably 100 years. So I think that we should concur with the action of the other body. The other amendments are conforming, except for on page 5, lines 9, 17, 24. A masculine pronoun is changed to the word the petitioner. I urge the Senate to adopt the changes.
And any other discussion in regard to Senate File 20? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 20, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquivel. Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 20. Senator Burns, are you ready on in regard to message 295?
Yes, Mr. President.
I'd ask the reading clerk read that message in at this time.
Senate File 11, 2011, February the 11th, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message number 295, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 27, Paramutual Commission Amendments. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, excused 4. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Burns, would you like to move this?
Mr. President, I would. Mr. President, I move message number 295, concurrence requested, being Senate File 27, Paramutual Commission Amendments, and ask that the body vote aye. Mr. President, if you recall, this particular bill allowed for the exclusion of all the employees at, let's say, a racetrack from having to be bonded. The way the statutes read before, anybody who even sold popcorn or balloons had to be bonded under the previous statute. What this does is it narrows it down to specifically those people who are associated directly with either the paramutual wagering or the horse racing itself. That's the important part. And, Mr. Chairman, what the amendments that the House put in just actually further clarified that and, in addition, gave the Commission the authority in those cases where it might be a gray area, gave them the authority to actually decide whether they're in the paramutual wagering and horse racing or not. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would ask the body to vote aye on that. It's further clarifying. And as to the language up in the title, that was at the request of LSO for clarification purposes.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 27. You've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting. Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 27. Senator Bebout, are you ready in regard to message number 301, Senate Joint Resolution 6?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Would the reading clerk read that message in right now?
February the 11th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 301. Concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate Joint Resolution number 6, Resolution Environmental Protection Agency Regulations. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 54, noes 2, excused 4. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Bebout.
Now, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move message number 301, concurrence requested for Senate Joint Resolution number 6, Resolution Environmental Protection Agency Regulations, and I ask the senators to vote aye. Mr. President, what the House did is when we got into the discussion about this joint resolution, and of course it deals with the overreaching arm of EPA trying to, by rule, implement what I would consider to be statutory requirements of Congress relative to the Clean Air Act. They felt that because of our amendment in the Senate where we went to the CSG West, that we should also go to the NCSL, National Conference of State Legislatures, and this issue was really expanding more than just to the western part of our country. The other thing they did, Mr. Chairman, is they said if we're going to send this to a congressional delegation, we want a return receipt requested. I think that's okay to see if they, in fact, do read these. And so I would ask the body to vote aye.
Discussion in regard to this request? Seeing none, the motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate Joint Resolution 6. You've been asked to vote aye. I'd ask the Chief Clerk to call the roll, please.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Americh? Esquibel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
no.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate Joint Resolution 6. Senator Perkins, we have another one here for you. Are you ready? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead, Senator Meyer.
Yeah. Folks in the balcony above the president are some... high school students from Tarrington, Wyoming, traveled all the way down here from the land of Goshen, Wyoming's number one agricultural county in the state. And would you please help me welcome them to the Senate?
Welcome, and we hope that you enjoy your day. Senator Perkins, are you ready on message 282?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. Would the reading clerk please read that message in?
February the 10th, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 282. Mr. President, Senate file number 17, probation and parole amendments. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd move message number 282, concurrence request to Senate file 17, probation and parole amendments, and ask the body to vote aye. This was also a interim committee bill, and what they did down there is the only thing they did is we add, if you remember with this bill, we had added some language in here that we'd put it into the Victims' Bill of Rights. There were two places that probably should have occurred instead of just one. And the House picked up one of those and put it in. You see, that's the First Amendment. The other thing they did was down on, there's also some discussion about this, that when you have a judgment and sentence, that that can act as the act and provide the ability of the victim to get restitution even after probation and parole is over, and that that can be essentially used as though a garnishment or an execution to go ahead and obtain the rest of the restitution. What they did down here is that has to either be requested by the victim or by the county attorney. In this, they just added the ability for both the victim, the division of victim services, which assists victims, or the county attorney. They just added that, so any of those individuals could request that that order or that execution to be issued. And that seems wholly appropriate to us. The victim would do it, but if the victim services could help them with that, it seems to be appropriate as well. And so with that, Mr. President, would ask the body to vote aye on this concurrence.
Any discussion on this request? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 17. You've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting? Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 17. Reports from standing committees.
February the 14th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 161, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Jennings, Landon, and Rothfuss, excuse, Senator Coe, Senator Kit Jennings, Chairman. February the 14th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 80, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Esquivel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 14th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 28, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Esquivel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. January the 14th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 217, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatern, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Bill's on second reading. House Bill 9, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 9, Department of Insurance Licensure Revision, sponsored by the Corporations Committee.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion? House Bill 9, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, It is so ordered. House Bill 62, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 62, Wyoming Controlled Substances Act Amendments, sponsored by Representative Gingery.
No amendments. Any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, House Bill 62, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 66, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 66, Water Development Projects Funding, sponsored by the Water Committee.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, House Bill 66, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 79, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 79, Establishment of Private Roads, sponsored by Representative Buchanan.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, House Bill 79, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 95, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 95, Involuntary Commitment Examiner, sponsored by Representative Harvey.
There is an amendment at this time, and I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in.
House Bill 95, second reading amendment number 1, page 2 after line 10.
That is your amendment, Senator Schiffer. Would you like to speak to that, please?
Mr. President, I'd like to move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 95. Mr. President, we had a bit of a discussion on this bill, and it is a good bill, on exactly what the bill does. And so I took it home to my Director of Standards of Grammar and Articulation, and got set straight on how to proceed with this. Mr. President, what this amendment does, it goes in on page 2, line 10, and adds the words, provided that a licensed physician's assistant shall not be the examiner for an involuntary hospitalization hearing. It almost says that in the Perkins Amendment, but this makes it absolutely clear that when you're talking about committing someone to an institution, it has to be someone, it has to be a doctor or a specialized nurse practitioner. We're moving that, the hearing, the examiner, to a little higher standard, making absolutely sure that everybody understands the significance of an involuntary commitment. I'd be happy to answer any questions and ask for your support.
Senator Scott. Mr. President, this is a friendly amendment. Mr. President, I think it says what the language of the bill already says, but I guess you could call it a preventive against creative misinterpretation of the language in the bill.
Senator Landon, did you want to speak? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was just going to thank the good senator from Johnson County and ask that he take information back home and show our appreciation back in Johnson County as well. I also consider this a friendly amendment and would urge its passage. Thank you.
Any other discussion on this amendment? Senator Schiffer? Okay. Question being called in regard to Second Amendment number 1 on House Bill 95. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. House Bill 95, any further discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 95, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 105, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 105, Temporary Military Duty, Child Custody, and Visitation, sponsored by Representative Throne.
There is an amendment, and I'd ask the reading clerk read in that amendment at this time.
House Bill 105, second reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 1 through 13.
Senator, or Mr. Majority Floor Leader, would you like to move and speak to your amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would. I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 105. Ask for the Senate's favorable consideration. Before I begin the amendment, let me just say that I apologize to the sponsor of this bill for going after his bill last week with not much notice. Unfortunately, we didn't have a time to get together in advance. However, regardless of my feelings on this bill, rather than kill it, I've tried to make it better. And I think I've gone over the amendment with the sponsor, and I think it does what it needs to do should you desire to pass this bill. I will further tell you that in preparing this amendment, I sought the assistance of the district court judges, particularly those that practice in this area. And as I said to you before, with a military base here and the National Guard and so forth based here, I have a lot of these cases. And as I told you before, I've never had a case not stayed as a result of the Service Members Civil Relief Act. That's what it's called now. It used to be called Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act. And this is what one judge said. I will finish by saying that no judge I have heard of or listened to would hold this against a civil or service member. We're all used to the protections of the Service Members Civil Relief Act as it arises in civil cases frequently, and watch closely to ensure that these men and women are never at a disadvantage due to their service to our country. Now, what the amendment does is it goes in on page, first of all, on page 3, and deals with a fairly problematic paragraph, which is Romanet 3 at the top of that page. And what it does is it takes that out. Now, the reason it takes it out is because it provided for an automatic termination of an order 20 days after the service member gets back, and then provides for a 10-day hearing. Part of the problem is that the way this bill is structured, there would be no way for the court to know when that individual gets back, let alone then try to schedule a hearing. And it also had that language in there that with regards to immediate danger and irreparable harm, which is highly problematic. So what this bill what this amendment to this section basically says is, in issuing any temporary custody order or visitation order under this section, the court shall consider whether the temporary order shall automatically terminate. So the court, we give the court that discretion. The next part of the amendment goes into another problematic area of the bill, and that's on page 4 with regard to paragraph B at the top. And in that particular paragraph, the original paragraph gave the court the authority to delegate visitation rights to other family members. Now, quite frankly, as I explained to you on the floor last week, these family members don't have standing at all in a divorce action between a husband and an ex-spouse. They just don't have standing. The only people that have standing to bring their own separate cause of action is grandparents and a custodial care provider. So rather than give standing for intervention into a divorce case, which we all know is highly problematic, there's all kinds of tensions involved in that. What this basically says then is that on line 6, we say rather than the court delegate, the service member, upon motion of the member, that the service member has to file the motion. He's the party to the action. Then the court may consider visitation rights in the alternate visitation, and if it's in the child's best interest. So that gets around that standing issue. Then on page 7, we go in paragraph Romanet 5. The language was in there was location for a period usually less than 180 days. And this was problematic to the judges also. First of all, what does usually mean? And you may actually have unintended consequences of interfering or hurting a service member who is deployed for more than 180 days. Now, the language that's in there, 45 days at a minimum, First of all, it's got to be more than 45 days. That came from district court judge here, and that's his rule of thumb. You don't want to be amending court orders for less than, like, 45 days because they stand on their own. The court would be bogged down with all kinds of little mini orders when somebody goes for 30-day training or something. So this, I think, fixes that particular portion of the bill. And so with that explanation, I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Any other discussion on this amendment? Seeing none, question? I'm sorry, Senator Hastert. Go ahead, Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. And the good sponsor did talk with me and some others, and I have been trying to consult with some of the military attorneys, and I believe that the concerns were addressed in this amendment, and I would support the amendment.
Okay. Any other question being called regard to second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 105. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, House Bill 105, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 114, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 114, Insurance Premiums Failure to Pay, sponsored by Representative Ken Escobel.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 114, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 123, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 123, Circuit Court Surety Bonds Repeal, sponsored by Representative Throne.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 123, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 124, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 124, National Guard Emergency Deployment Professional Licensing, sponsored by the Transportation Committee.
There are no amendments. House Bill 124, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 176, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 176, Nuclear Energy as Carbon-Free Renewable Energy, sponsored by Representative Miller.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 176, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Yes, Senator Scott.
Privilege of the floor.
You may.
Mr. President, there were passed out earlier some handmade Valentines connected by little sparkly things. I authorized it. I thought they were labeled where they're from, and it turns out they're not. They're from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Cheyenne. I just wanted to let the Senate know that.
Okay. Senator Meyer?
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Fellow senators, above the balcony, above the Senate president there, we have some more students from the great county of Goshen and Torrington High School. I would ask you to help me welcome them to the Senate.
Welcome, students. We hope you have a great day. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list for third reading today?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list. Third reading consent list is as follows. House Bill 2, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Sunset. House Bill 4, Department of Insurance Background Checks. House Bill 68, Violent Felony Definition Expansion. House Bill 76, Game and Fish Turkey Pioneer licenses. Oh my. House Bill 1. House Bill 133. House Bill 133, Special Limited Fishing Permits. House Bill 156, Grand Teton National Park Transfer of State Lands. And House Bill 177, Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home and Thank You Day.
Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Senator Jennings? 156 has been removed. Would anyone else like any other bills removed from this consent list? having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 2, House Bill 4, House Bill 68, House Bill 76, House Bill 133, House Bill 177. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting. Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Platern,
aye.
President Anderson,
aye.
30 ayes. House Bill 2, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 2, 30 ayes. House Bill 4, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 4, 30 ayes. House Bill 68, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Landon, aye to no.
Anderson, aye to no.
President Anderson, aye to no.
Burns, aye to no.
Bebout, aye to no. Hines, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Christensen, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no. Coe, aye to no. Cooper, aye to no. Amrick, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 68, 13 ayes, 17 noes. House Bill 76, are there any changes? Scott, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Coe, aye to no. Johnson, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Closing vote. Bebout, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 76, 23 ayes, 7 noes. House Bill 133, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 133, 29 ayes, 1 no. House Bill 177, are there any changes? Landon, aye to no. Rothfuss, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Von Flateren, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Johnson, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 177, 22 ayes, 8 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 2, House Bill 4, House Bill 76, House Bill 133, and House Bill 177 have passed the Senate. House Bill 68, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 68 has failed to pass the Senate. Other bills on third reading. House Bill 156, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 156, Grand Teton National Park transfer of state land and act relating to state land, sponsored by Representative Petrov. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are no amendments, but Senator Jennings, would you like to discuss this bill with us?
Thank you, Mr. President. In our last two readings, we learned that if you get a bunch of lawyers, judges, a few old AGs, a current one, and maybe throw in an old governor, that you can change the name of trust lands to statutory lands, and it's okay to vote for that. But I also asked the question during the Committee of the Whole on the U.S. Constitution, where it said that you had to have a specific list. Just to remind you, it was erection of forts, magazine, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. And in the discussion here, we've all decided that this is not going to have any buildings on it. This is going to be preserved as open land. So, Mr. President, I was really kind of looking for some place in there where we get a description other than they passed another law to override this portion of the Constitution. And then, Mr. President, I really would ask us to think what we're doing here. Right now, there's a major move in Washington to cut costs and expenditures. But yet, here in Wyoming, we're sitting here saying, give us $107 million and we'll give you this land. And this land's been there, and it's not going anyplace, and it's appreciated every time. So where is our participation in encouraging Washington to cut costs? Our participation is telling them to spend more on Wyoming to move this land where it's not being hurt. The Teton National Park can use it. We can still lease it. They could lease it. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask us to really think about what we're doing here and vote no on this bill.
Senator Case.
I would urge the Senate to vote aye on this bill. I think what clearly we've had two things that we're trying to weigh here. One is we have a burden and an obligation to the trust beneficiaries, that's our school children, that benefit from the trust and the state lands established for their benefit upon our becoming a state. That's ingrained in our Constitution, and we have that obligation. We also have another obligation that the good senator has talked about in terms of supporting the United States Constitution and supporting efforts, I guess, to reform Washington. Now, let me tell you, when we swear to uphold the Constitution, we don't always get to choose how that Constitution is interpreted. Since Marbury versus Madison, the Supreme Court and the courts of this land have been able to interpret U.S. laws. It's just like we had another bill about campaign finance. And as you remember, some of us didn't like the outcome of that bill, didn't like the ruling that the Supreme Court made. But we have developed a change in the law in Wyoming to
respect the Constitution as the Supreme Court has interpreted it. It's no different here. Unfortunately, for better or worse, the Supreme Court and the courts have interpreted the expanded powers, either it's through the Welfare Clause or it's through the Necessary and Proper Clause. The point is, it's been done. And we have to uphold that Constitution as well, as interpreted. You can make up your mind, but it's a balance. If you decide not to do so, then hold the school children and the trust in the palm of your hand and think about it. How else are you going to achieve the value of that trust for them? Because there is no way, there's no way that that land will ever be developed. It's a political hot potato. We are lucky to have this opportunity in our hands. It'll probably never come again. Because suppose we did want to sell it and have it developed. Don't you believe that the owners of the land surrounding it could spend a lot of obstacles to prevent any kind of development whatsoever? And don't you believe that our own citizens would question why we would be developing land in a preserve that benefits the United States? It'd be a very difficult thing to achieve value through the development process, and probably something we don't want to do. We are now given the opportunity to put away money for the trust beneficiaries and to achieve a lasting legacy and realize the value of those lands, and at the same time preserve them for the people of the United States. Our choice is clear. Vote yes.
Other discussion? Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. As a follow-up, to remind the body that we have spent 3 decades trying to get this issue resolved, either through a trade or a purchase. This is the closest we've come. I urge a yes vote on 156.
Other discussion? Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, we've had a number of different questions raised and a really good discussion over this bill. It's centered around both a national constitution, it's centered around our state, and it's centered around our schools and our statutory or trust to the children. We've answered the questions when it came to our national constitution. We talked about the Director of Interior and what his standard was and what he relied on to make that decision. We talked about the authority of the state and the Supreme Court's rulings that it is up to us to do this. And we talked about the opportunity that's come out of 30 years of hard work and $107 million offer that's been signed and what that money can return to the schools on an annual basis, nearly $5 million. The beauty of that, as has been stated before and will again, is this land never leaves public hands. It remains available in probably one of the toughest systems there are, and that's the park system. They guard their land. However, it is still available. It's still accessible. It's still the public's land. This deal that has been set up arranges for us to be able to meet our obligation to the children going forward, and at the same time, the community and the public remains whole. I'd urge the adoption.
Other discussion? Question being called. House Bill 156, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks? Hines, Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
House Bill 156, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 156 has passed the Senate. Introduction of the budget bill. Senate File 1, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations, sponsored by the Joint Appropriations Committee.
Pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1B2, Senate File 1 is referred directly to the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole to consider only the budget bill, Senate File 1.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion has carried. I would invite Senator Landon to the front.
Gird your loins, baby.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The reading clerk will please read Senate File 1.
Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation for Senate File 1. Mr. Chairman, if I may have the privilege of the floor.
Yes, you may.
Ladies and gentlemen, before we begin actually working the sections of the budget, and we'll go through section by section, and as you pay attention to the various sections, that's the way the order in which amendments go for those or folks that are new, that we'll go through them in the order of the budget. First thing I'd like to do is talk to you a little bit about the Goldenrod and the Craig Report. And we do that for a couple reasons, to remind ourselves where we are, what the differences are between the governor's rec and the JAC's rec. And we'll talk a little bit about the Craig report before we go forward. By way of explanation for those that are new and those that may have forgotten, about 10 years ago, the executive branch and the legislative branch got together and created a consensus revenue estimating group. It's not a legislative feature because it's a joint collaboration between the two branches. The Craig group has a series of folks that are on it, including the folks from the university, Oil and Gas Commission, a legislative service office, budget officer, the budget officer from the ANI, and folks from the Department of Education, because that's such a significant part of the budget. And they get together annually in October, actually towards the end of September and early October, and they come up with the October Craig Report. The purpose of that group is to have a consensus estimate of projected revenues that we all agree to be abide by, so the executive branch is required to provide a budget that meets this balance within the Craig report, and we've agreed that that's what we will use to establish our revenues going forward. When you then the Craig group meets again in January to review the estimate, and that is the basis of the Craig report in January. In balance, in general speaking, you have to also remember that the bulk of our revenues that are floating out there, about 60% of all of our revenues, derive from minerals in one fashion or another. And so that is an important factor because it heavily influences our budget. Now, incidentally, the Craig group then meets again and throughout the year on a monthly basis just to make sure there aren't any important things that we need to look at. So our budget, as you look forward, is based in the October Craig report, is based upon oil projections of $51 a barrel for 2010 and 2011. Now, oil production is generally going down, except in that from the distillates that we're now getting out of the deep wells, natural gas production. There are two things that influence our revenues from oil, and this is true for gas. One is price and one is volume. So as your volumes drop off, if you don't pick it up on price, you've got a problem. But if you look at it, you can see that when you see a $65 forecast, by the way, that means that the average price through the year has to be $65. And if most of your sales are coming in the winter, that's not always the case. It is true oftentimes for natural gas. If your largest sales are coming in the winter, it's not as though $55 in this instance or $65 is the average price throughout the year. Rather, the Craig Report group will say, well, we think in the winter prices will be at $75, in the summer it'll be $55. But you end up with an average, and it's applied to the average is $65. As everyone should know by now, you turn over to page 3 of your October Craig estimates. Natural gas is the driver of our surpluses. And our surpluses, the October forecast increased, actually held production, but increased our forecast to $3.90. Now, I don't know what the winter prices is, but my recollection is that the winter prices are around the $5 range. Summer prices are lower than the $3.90 range. But it's important that we now have natural gas forecasted at $3.90 throughout 2012. Every dollar of natural gas that drops, it is, depending on how you look at it, is between $100 and $200 million that drop to all of our funds. And that natural gas not only influences the general fund, the budget reserve account, but it also influences heavily our school foundation program accounts for reasons we'll talk about a little bit later. We have natural gas going up in 2013, 2014, up to the 425 and then to 450. So that's that is a number that's important for folks to understand that that's the driver to your budget. Coal production remains at $12.04 for the 2010 and 2011, and then goes up to $12.54 and $13. And you can see the production is projected to increase. That's a very important number. Those are not only important revenues to us, but they're very stable jobs to our economy. When you look at the January Craig that came out this year, there were no adjustments to those pricings. The pricing adjustments, if you look at your January Craig, you'll see over at page 2 of the Craig report, and in essence, the adjustments were as follow. There is a rebounding in sales and use tax, so we increased the revenue picture by $17.4 million. Now, that's important because remember, too, the sales and use taxes are what principally fund your cities, towns, and counties. And in most instances, particularly those counties that have mineral royalty production, they have seen a pretty significant rebound in their revenues. Now, when you look at cities, towns, and counties, and we have those figures, and you'll see some of those revenues in your 2011 data sheet, but generally what you're going to see is that counties like Laramie County, Albany County, those counties that don't have a lot of mineral production, their revenues pretty well stay stable throughout They don't have big jumps or declines as a function of the mineral industry. On the other hand, Campbell County, Sublette County, and to some extent, in some instances, Teton County, their assessed valuations are heavily influenced by the mineral wealth, mostly those about six big counties. So they see huge increases during when mineral prices are up because their ad valorem prices go up, and then when mineral production goes down, they see big declines. But in general, they never hit the levels of Laramie, Albany County, Platte County, Goshen. Now, this is important because when you hear that the cities, towns, and counties saying, well, our gross revenues have gone up 40%, down 30%, generally those increases and declines are really because of about four or five counties, potentially six counties. So those counties go way up and they come way down. But most counties are pretty stable as they go through there, and you can see those revenue pictures and who's doing well and who's not doing well in your data fact book. So as we talk about cities, towns, and counties, your JAC doesn't just make things up. Rather, we look at what the revenue pictures are doing, and we look statewide, and we look at those counties that are heavily influenced. Mr. Chairman, and then I would like to take you to your goldenrod. The goldenrod that I'm working off of is the...
Mr. Vice President, sorry to interrupt, Mr. Vice President, but do you want to take any questions on the two Craig reports?
The Craig reports.
Any discussion? Senator Bebout?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One quick question on the Craig report. In the original governor's budget that he submitted to the JAC, he had a $536 million worth of revenues in excess of where we were before. Now we have the January Craig report. What is that number today?
Mr. Chairman, the number today went up to $24 million above that, so it would be $550 million, and that would be all the funds together.
Senator Meyer?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I have privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman?
You may, Senator.
Senators, please help me welcome our third group from Torrington High School today. They're in the balcony above the chairman. And would you please help me welcome them to the Senate?
Further discussion on the Craig reports as outlined by the Appropriations Chair. Senator Hastert?
Mr. Chairman, when we get to the cheat sheets, which are available, there are, for those folks that are in the gallery that are following this and want to see the cheat sheets, we made extra copies and they're back in downstairs if they haven't been distributed. I know there are some folks who would like to follow that, and they're available. Mr. Chairman, that takes us to the goldenrod. If you've got your goldenrod, and I'm working off the February 8th goldenrod. February 8th goldenrod has the January Craig status. That is the status that we began at the beginning of the fiscal or the biennium, which is the beginning of this fiscal year. The second column is the governor's recs. Now, the governor's recs came in with the Governor Friedenthal's recs. The JAC then did not vote on that. Rather, we invited the new governor to come in and make his new recommendations. And those then are the governor's recommendations. And the third column is the JAC's recommendation. Now, for the new members, as we go through the week, you'll see these golden rods with two more columns. One will have the Senate position, and one will have the House position, so we can monitor our respective positions. I want to caution you this right now, and as I'll explain to you as we go through the goldenrod as best I can, kind of the differences between where the JAC ended up and the governor's recs. both governors made a recommendation to that we divert more revenue from the revenues that are statutorily earmarked to the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund. And they recommended that we divert that revenue and do a number of things with it. That recommendation was rejected. Now, it's significant because the amount of that revenue, and I'm going to show you that the governor's rec was generally flawed because it was based upon a misunderstanding of what our profile sheets are, but in general, maybe you don't recall, but there's, by constitution, there's a statutory diversion of part of the severance taxes to the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund. By statute, we have increased that by 1%. So that's an optional diversion of severance tax money that goes into the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund. Historically, that diversion took place in good times, and then when the bad times or tough times came along during the 90s, we unraveled that and brought that income back into the general fund to help operate our budgets. And then when things got better again in about 2000 to 2003, when we no longer needed the revenue to live on, we reinstated that diversion back into the Permanent Mineral Wyoming Trust Fund. Now, during a compromise in 2009, there was a difference of view between the House and the Senate, and as a consequence of that, we diverted one-half of 1% for 1 year from that diversion into into what's called the SPRAW account, the Spending Policy Reserve account. And in a moment, I'll show you where the monies arrived. We also appropriated some money out of the cities, towns, and counties for that amount. And I'll talk to you about reasons why I think that was a mistake. It was well-intended, but it was a mistake for a variety of reasons. So there's $74 million that arrived at that. So that 1% the 0.5% generates about $75 million per year, or $150 million per biennium. The governors, both of them, recommended that we make that permanent, and that as a result of that permanency, take one-third and earmark it to cities, towns, and counties, one-third to be earmarked for highways, and one-third to be directed into the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account. The JAC rejected that recommendation, believing that it's, in general, those revenues are important, and they're sort of the last revenues that you go to. And if you build up everyone's expectations and build up your spending levels, and you've already eroded that revenue base, when times get tough, times will really get tough because you don't have those revenues to go back to. So we'll show you that. But the governors did, principally Governor Friedenthal and adopted by Governor Meade, did a couple things. They recommended that we use those revenues that are flowing into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund and are profiled in part, not in whole, but in part in the SPRAW account. They recommended those be used to fund cities, towns, counties, and highways. Your JAC recommendation rejected that. And on account of that, we recommended that we actually take from our general fund and fund $35 million to cities, towns, and counties, and $40 million for highways. And we do that out of our current revenues. We leave the revenue flowing into the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund. Now, the second thing the governors did is because you create that extra $150 million, and we're not making a demand on current revenues for cities, towns, and counties, the governors then took some of the excess revenues and forward funded substantial amounts in the Department of Health to the tune of about $70 million and $25 million, almost $100 million. And they forward-funded the School of Energy Research for the university. And that's not a bad idea. I mean, it was creative, but we rejected that. So we're not forward funding those obligations. Because of that, when we come back in the next biennium, we're going to have to pick up the funding for the School of Energy Resources because it's presently funded by AML, Abandoned Mine Land Reclamation dollars, and the forecast is those dollars are likely to hit the they likely no longer continue under any one of the new revenue projections at the congressional level. So we'll have to pick up those fundings. We also have, part of what the governor was recognizing is that we're going to lose the ARRA funding from the federal government for Medicaid spending. And they were saying, let's go ahead and set aside the money for that in the future. We didn't do that. So when we come back, we'll have to pick up the ARRA funding. So between the ARRA funding changes and if there are continuing to be health care or increases in Medicaid spending and the AML funding, we're going to come back, and I think we're going to have to fund on the order of magnitude of about $100 million. In fact, I would increase it a little bit that because you've got Medicaid, and this year we have funded the major maintenance for the university and the community colleges out of ARRA funding, and that's on the order of about $30 to $40 million. So if you do some math, we're talking about $150 million or so next biennium that we're going to have to spend. And so if the present budget, if you compare the JAC rec to the governor's rec, while it looks like we're saving about the same amounts inside the spending or inside what I call the legislative stabilization reserve account, we'll point out in a minute, it's important to know that the governor's recs would have put more revenue in on the order of $150 million. And that's about the $150 million we're going to have to pick up when we come back. So our philosophy is keep the revenues where they belong and pay cash for what you have, and then we'll address the future needs when we come back. So don't be assuming when you look at the two profiles that they're alike, because they're not. There are some significant issues that were different. So let me take you through now the goldenrod.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification's sake, for those who've forgotten and for the freshmen, I've been listening carefully to what the chairman's saying, and his explanation is good, and I could not explain it, but I think just a bit of context for understanding, for our understanding. He's talking about the 1%. What he's talking about is on oil and gas, the severance tax is 6%. That's what the state takes. 1.5% of that, by constitution, has to go into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. What he's been talking about, that other 1%, has been increasing it from 1.5% to 2.5%, has been going into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. So last year, we took a half of that percent. So, but we weren't increasing it 1%. We were actually increasing it from 25% to 40%. And we're talking about cutting it back to 1/3, just so everybody has a context of what the chairman's speaking of. I hope that clarifies some of the looks on people's faces here.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. All right. So when you begin to look at the first page of your goldenrod, the first page profiles the funds available. That's all the money that's coming to generally to your budget reserve and your general fund amount. Now, in general, we try to have reoccurring expenses come out of the budget or out of the general fund, and one-time expenses out of the budget reserve account. We've not always adhered to it, but that's generally the understanding. That is, you put enough money in your general fund to operate and pay your bills, and that's your recurring expenses, your operating costs, and your one-time expenditures come out of the general fund. One-time out of the budget reserve account, the BRA account. So the first part is the funds available, and you have the accumulation of both of those reserve accounts. Now, that doesn't profile all your revenues because significantly it does not have the school foundation program account. Then you have the expenditures, and the expenditures are the difference between, or that's your budget bills and then your major, your bills as they're coming through on the session. You see that budget session, general session, those are the bills of the cost of the bills that are coming through. And then they get, next year, some of those will be biennialized. And then you have the total funds appropriated, and which is your expenditures less, or the that's the total of all your expenditures. And once again, if you were to break down the reason why there is, that looks like the governor's recs and the JAC recs are very similar, it's because of that one-half of 1%, because ultimately we're spending about the same amount of money, but the revenue pictures are drastically different by $150 million. But the way those two things wash out, they begin to look alike, but they're not, and we'll take you through to show you why. So then there's a budget reserve account. Now, the budget reserve account balance happens to be the same amount as the statutory reserve. The statutory reserve is generally 5% of the general fund revenues, $98 million, and we leave that. The governor is required by law to keep that amount, make a budget that proposes that it would be that amount left in the account. The legislature is free to spend that. We've often argued, and we continue to argue, that it would be misguided to spend that amount of money, but there's nothing magical about it. But generally 5% reserve, statutory reserve, is what we write our checks books to make sure there's always checks in the bank, or there's money in the bank to write our checks. Remember, folks, what we're looking at is a profile, and that is these are the revenues that accumulate through the two-year period, and these are the expenses that accrue during the two-year period. The revenues, these revenues are not all in the bank. They take 2 years to accumulate, and expenditures aren't spent one day. They take 2 years to spend, and the revenues come in at different times than the expenditures go out. Your payroll goes out every month, but most of your revenues come in, if it's severance taxes, they come in quarterly. As you know, your property taxes are paid in December and April. And so they come in at different times. But the JAC often looks at the cash flows, and you recall we looked at cash flows on Senate file that dealt with school facilities a while ago. Now, what we did several years ago is we created the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account, and that's profiled down below. We created that fund for a couple things. One is that's the new rainy day account. And it also, we started pulling off the carryover surpluses because those surpluses were making a lot of our budgeting confusing. But right now, presently look at it, we increased the budget reserve account by $48 million under the JAC recs. And that $48 million, when taken out, leaves us with a budget reserve amount of about $1 billion. Now, when we left the last session, I don't know, actually, I think when we left the last session, that number was, I'll look it up later, but my recollection was about $800 million. So we are gaining on the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account. Now you can ask yourself, what is an appropriate rainy day account to have? And there is no science in that. But what we do know is back at the during the 80s when we had the last boom, there was about $1 billion of rainy day account at a time when our general fund budget reserve expenditures were about $1 billion. And when the commodities, the oil and gas commodity energy prices went down throughout the 80s and early in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, mid-90s, the state of Wyoming was had convened a group of people because we had a $500 million deficit to deal with because we didn't have the revenues. Stock market went up for the rest of the nation. Commodities went down in Wyoming, and we had spent through that $1 billion. Now, folks, we have, as you can see, you've got a budget to reserve general fund expenditures of about $3 billion. So to have that same cushion that we our predecessors provided for us, you'd have to have $3 billion in reserves to have the same amount of cushion. And one of the reasons why our budget is strong is because we're not having to fund the general or the schools from the general fund, which we were having to do just 10 years ago. First $100 million came out, went to the schools to pay for schools. And then we have the water development accounts. Now, if you turn over to page 2 of your goldenrod, you see the profile of the general fund.
Mr. Vice President?
Yes.
We have a question. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to be sure you understand, on the LSAR, when we left here with the budget we had for 11 and 12, there were $269 million that put it up to just a little under $1.3 billion. But that number is down $221 million. And then you talk about the $150 million. I think that's part of the $221 million, why that goes down. Where does the other $60 or $70 million come from? Why do we have that decrease in the BRA over the excess?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, because that's what's being spent in this budget. So, I mean, it used to be that your expenditures and the cost of your budget were seen up in the funds above. But since we're taking the entire surplus from the budget reserve and the as well as the general fund into the LSRA account, then the profile you see for the 269, that is essentially what I'd call the new revenues that come in on the new Craig forecast. And the budget then proposes to spend all of that but about $48 million. So that ultimately is the $269,000 is the new revenues forecasted by the two green Craig reports, and that what we're spending all but $48 million.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, a question before we go on to the next pages. Up on the statutory reserve, I realize the governor is required to maintain that, but the legislature isn't required to maintain that. And the only advantage to maintaining that is if we borrow money. That's what determines what our credit rating is. To my knowledge, we are not borrowing any money and haven't since we paid, I think the prison was the last borrowed money we had. We paid that off and paid cash. Is there any particular reason why we maintain the $98 million in that account when it's actually of no use to us?
Mr. Chairman, when your accounts get down, I mean, if you're sitting there and your accounts were all down to zero, it'd be very important to have the 5% reserve because going back to that concept that your revenues do not come in when your expenditures go out, you need about 5% in the bank to be able, so that every month you write checks, there's enough money in the bank to cover it. So that if you're if your expenditures are $1 billion and you're expending them out at, well, let's say just let's use rough numbers. If your expenses are $100 million a month and all your revenue comes in at November, it may be at June and July, you don't have enough to pay your bills except that you keep a reserve in your account. Now, it's true that as long as we have large sums of money in the agency pool, now, the agency pool is a sum of money that the Treasurer is investing at any given time on short-term basis, and that would include the Legislative Stable Reserve account. It includes what's in the statutory reserve. It includes all the appropriations that you make that are not yet expended. So if you make an appropriation to build a school, and the money's held there, but the school hasn't get built, the money's still in the bank. And right now, our agency pool varies anywhere from, say, $5 to $10 billion dollars. And so we don't have a problem paying those checks. Now, answering your question directly, and principally, as long as you've got the LSRA at $1 billion, you know that while the billion takes 2 years to get there, suppose there's $500 million at this given point, that's certainly enough to write your checks. I think at this point the reason why we keep the statutory reserve is because of the discipline of making sure that we have that money available to write the checks so that you never take your accounts to zero, so you can always write your checks. It has less importance when you have other monies available, when your coffee cans, if you will, your rainy day accounts up. You know there's enough money to write your checks, but there's still a discipline that you need to have it. So if you spend through it, all you know is you've got to replace it. The governor's got to replace it. And then one day when it's the last dollar out, you've got to find enough money to put in your checking account to be able to write the checks. It also makes sure that you got $100 million or $98 million going into the next biennium. So I would say this. There's no harm in having it. It's a good disciplinary reason to have it. It's a good way to know that you got $98 million minimum going forward. It has less impact today on account of the LSRA rainy day account. In terms of investment, it's invested the same as the LSRA. What happens with respect to the Treasurer is the Treasurer looks at cash flows. They don't look at the goldenrod. They look at the cash flows, so they know generally how many checks they're going to have to write on a given month. They look at all the excess revenue, and then they put that out into the bond market or into other returns. And generally right now, I think those pool dollars are 3 to 5% is what we're making on it, as opposed to the permanent funds that we're making, say, from 5 to 8% on our investments.
Senator Scott.
What you're telling us is that 5% statutory reserve is basically our working capital, and that if we didn't have that, then we'd have to say, well, about $100 million in that LSRA is stuff that really isn't reserves because we couldn't afford to spend it because we'd have deficits during the year.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. That's another way of saying the same thing. All right, folks, so then you turn over to page 2, and now we're looking at the general fund. And now you're beginning to see the impacts of the bills that we're passing. So first of all, you have the revenues, and you have your estimated revenues. Now, if you want to see where those revenues are coming from, by and large, if you go to the Craig Green reports, and you look at those tables at the end, you can begin to see the revenue sources. So you go to your October Craig, and if you go back to these tables, and they look like this on the there, you can see what revenues are, and you can look off the top. You can see that, for example, federal mineral royalties are earmarked to UW, School Foundation, Highway Fund, etc. Now, those are just the mineral royalties, and you've got sales tax, but generally speaking, if you want to see where the money's come from, you kind of go to the green sheets. But that doesn't account for all the income. It accounts for a lion's share of it, but not all of it. So the first bill you see is House Bill 147. Well, that was an excise tax vendor compensation, so that was a reduction in tax. So it reduces our revenue. So the reason House Bill 147 is profiled in revenues is because by providing an exemption, you have less revenue, so you have a deduct at $7.3 million. And then you have your total revenues, and now you see your appropriations from the general fund. You begin with the 2010 budget bill, and then you have all the other bills, and now you can see the House bills and Senate files that have appropriations, and you see three different columns. Now, generally, the way this works is as follows. When a bill passes general file in the first house, it's profiled against both houses at the same amount. So if you take, for example, a House Bill 37, and if it passed the Senate or the House at $200,000, it's profiled against the governor, against the January and the JAC status. If it goes to the next house and the next house takes that money away, then when it passes the committee of the whole on the second house, the second house gets it profiled at the new amount, but the first house hasn't changed their position at that point, so it's profiled at the its original. So let's take a look at Senate File 57, 100th State Fair Celebration. Actually, that's not a good example. What happened there is the original bill had $250,000. When JAC did it, JAC put the $250,000 in the budget, and so it moved up to the budget. That's not a good example. You know what? We're just over crossover day, but later on when you begin to see one house different than the other house, that's the difference between the committee of the whole of the two houses. Now, when you turn over to the next, now the budget reserve will, or the general fund will generally zero out because we always have to put more money in the general fund to cover our checks. So we only put enough to cover our checks. When you go to look at the budget reserve account, there's where most of the federal mineral royalties and the severance are directed to. So, when you look at the top of the budget reserve account, the first thing you see underneath the, beginning balance is an increase in reversions transferred to the BRA account. Now, we don't always profile reversions. At any given year, at the end of the year, there's going to be, say, 10 to as much as $50 million of reversions. Those are appropriations that remained unexpended because employees weren't hired or a variety of different reasons. In this instance, you'll recall that the governor had recommended that the data, the funding for the data centers come out of reversions that were made available because we had set aside, the governor had actually reached out and collected a bunch of money in the order of $12 million to address the flooding in Fremont County and other places, and the federal government came through and paid for those expenses, so then there was $12 million available, and he recommended that we fund that with the data center. What JAC did is said, well, look, those are reversions. Just profile them here, and then you just look at the expenses below. So it happens to be that that $12 million is for the reversions that came out of the flood dollars. And another good thing to note, folks, that $12 million was not appropriated by us. Rather, the governor, when there was emergency, went out gathered up $12 million of money just sitting around the other agencies. So, I mean, there was an emergency, $12 million, and that's not the only one that did that. There is flex authority in these budgets, and if you think that out of $3 billion that happens to be the exact target that what's spent and every dollar gets spent, it doesn't work that way. And if you it's naive to believe that the governor can't at any given time go out and raise and accumulate 12 to as high as $50 million. Now, it has different consequences what agencies he goes to. And there have been times where he's gone to the Department of Health, for example, to say, look, you have the biggest budget, so you give me $20 million, and then I'll get it backfilled when the legislature comes in. But in this instance, there was $12 million that came from agency budgets that was never backfilled. So it's just turned into excess dollars. So when you hear people say, hey, look, if the governor wants to do it, he can find the money. That's a true statement in many instances. And here, $12 million was gathered up. As you go down, you see the next ones are below that are the budget transfers, mostly the when you look at that line with $1 billion going to the general fund, that's the budget balancer. So there's more money in the budget reserve account by design, and in order to pay the bills in the general fund, that $1.1 billion has to be transferred from there to the general fund. And the last amendment we'll have of the last day will be the budget balancer, because we don't really know what that budget balancer is. It's just an estimate now. Now you see the important is from the budget reserve account, what we have done is we've created a trigger. And the trigger is that happens to be that when the BRA account, we're going to take out that $484 million and under the GovSrec, the $228 million. Those are the excess over the reserves. So that's where the money to the LSRA comes from. The LSRA results from those transfers to the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account, our rainy day account. In fact, if you look at that $48 million under our recommendation, it drops down and it hits in the LSRA. So in line, you look at that line, or number six, it drops down into the LSRA. So there's $48 million of excess. There was $28 million in the governor's rec that went down. And we leave the BRA account, the budget reserve account, with about $98 million, which is the balance as we go forward. Now, the LSRA account, we start off with $1 billion that we've accumulated over time from July 1st of 2010, and you can see that we've added $48 million. Now, the governor, you recall, as I explained to you, had recommended that we take some of the transfer from the SPRA account, one-third of the SPRA account, to the LSRA, and that's the $52 million. Now, that's where I wanted to tell you that there's a big confusion between what the governor had intended and what, in fact, happened. As you can see, he took one-third of the SPRA account. Well, the SPRA account does not only represent the 0.5% diversions. That's $74 million, and the SPRA account is not the same as the monies that we diverted from the 0.5% that went to the permanent mineral trust fund. So he's proposing that we just take one-third of the SPRA account and move it in here. And that's a dangerous move. We'll talk about that in a moment. But so that's where he gathered that $52 million. And then down below, the governor recommended that $50 million be held out of the SPRA account to backfill the STEM facility, that is the science, teaching, engineering, math building that the ENSI building is proposed to be funded in UW for the also called the ENSI building. So it's a science, engineering, math labs. And he was proposing that if the AML dollars don't come through, let's pay for it out of the SPRA account. And you could see that the JAC rejected that recommendation. The JAC's recommendation was either it comes from the AML dollars or it doesn't get funded. And when you see that, you could see that we're basically about the same level as the governor was. But governor's recs, if the STEM building were in fact built and constructed with AML funding, then they've got $50 million that are in that coffee can. So for all practical purposes, on that line, the governor's rec was $50 million more than ours. Everybody understand what's happening there? So that is I don't think the governor ever expected that the AML dollars would not be here, because those that we're appropriating have kind of already been promised. But by backfilling it, you create a coffee can, another savings account of $50 million. So that's $150 million what. And what we did, of course, is we didn't add more revenues. See, let's restate that again. Governor added $52 million from the SPRA account diversion, but then he took a deduction of $50 million. JAC did not add the $52 million, nor did we create the backfill, and that's one of the reasons why it looks on paper like we're in the same position. In fact, we're not. Now, flipping over to the next page is the School Foundation Program account. Now, these accounts are getting a little more complicated, and let me tell you a little bit why. Since Campbell won, the state has undertaken the obligation to construct schools. And we know that in the state of Wyoming, there's about a $300 to $400 million of contractor capacity to build schools. We've been as high as $400 million for the biennium. That's $200 million a year. And we've been lower. We're lower now. It was when we first began this path down the Campbell, or post-Campbell one, we were building schools principally from coal lease bonuses that were paid to the state of Wyoming as a result of coal sales, federal mineral royalties, not federal mineral royalties, but federal coal sales, leasing. Well, those leasings have declined substantially, and we've not been receiving those levels of coal lease bonuses. But another thing took place, and that is the major source of revenue to the School Foundation Program account are the earmarked federal mineral royalties. And once again, if you go back and look at your Craig's sheets, you can see the amount of federal mineral royalties that are earmarked to the School Foundation Program account. When royalties skyrocketed, we had excess monies being paid into the School Foundation Program account, so we were amassing pretty substantial surpluses in there, not because we were making more money on school lands or the Common School Permanent Land Fund, but because we had earmarked enough revenues to pay for schools at a time where revenues were about half of where we are, and all of a sudden they jump up and you have these huge excesses. Your chairman of Education Committee years ago had said, look, we don't need all those earmarked revenues. And the schools howled, said, look, those are education dollars, you can't divert them. We used the first surpluses to pay for the Hathaway program. And that's where the Hathaway funding came, almost $300 to $400 million, came from the difference between the earmarked federal mineral royalties and what we were actually spending. What we did then is realize that after Hathaway was paid, that bill was paid, then we were losing our coal lease bonuses. And so we took what I'd call the Hathaway differential, and we're moving it out of the account to really build for schools. So federal mineral royalties out of the School Foundation Program have picked up the deficit that coal lease bonuses used to do. And the net effect of it, folks, is that since we began Campbell 1, we've not taxed anybody in the state to build schools. Your mill levies all went down. Your neighbor's mill levies went down because counties no longer pay for those schools. And we've shifted that load to the mineral industry, and they're building our schools. And this is how it happens. In the Foundation Program account, we make sure that there's always $100 million to carry over each year to make sure that we start the account with enough money to pay for our bills. And then we transfer to the school capital construction accounts the amount in excess of what we need to pay for schools. So if you look down at one of the last lines under appropriations, you'll see transfer to school CapCon account about $98 million. So that's the new revenue that comes in this biennium that was above forecast, and you can see it's transferred down into the school capital construction account. Now, we also needed a way to keep track of what's out there. So we and at the same time, if we receive a bunch more money from federal mineral royalties, the question is, what do you want to do with it? Do you want to pay for another Hathaway program? Well, about 2 years ago, we decided here's the answer. We would take it down and put it in the school capital construction account, and we would pay for our schools. As soon as we had excess revenue, and you see on the line there's $314 million of excess revenue, we moved that into the Common School Permanent Land Fund holding account. And that's a new holding account that we put that into, and we'll talk about in a moment. But what if we don't spend that money, what's designed now is for that to trip or trigger into and go in the Common School Permanent Land Fund. And the reason for that is because we think that that fund is really grossly underfunded to help pay for schools in the event that we were to lose our FMR royalties, and we need to begin to build that account. Right now it's just under $2 billion and a long ways away from being able to pick up the deficit of federal mineral royalties. If we lost federal mineral royalties tomorrow or our commodities go down, this is where it hits you. You think it hits you your other account, but remember the Supreme Court said this is your first obligation. And if you kick up the cost of spending on schools and you lose, you know, a dollar or two in your commodity prices and it hits here, this is where you start seeing deficits. And when you talk about what do you need to have in the LSRA, our rainy day account, it's enough to make sure that we can pay this obligation over a long period of time while still meeting our other obligations. And when you're talking about cities, towns, and counties, and they keep looking at your rainy day account, they don't look at this obligation, and we continue to look at it to say, can we afford it, and what's the impact on us if we lose some of our FMR revenue because the people of the state of Wyoming, their taxes are not paying for schools, nor are they paying for, well, that's not true on total. The bulk of it's paid for by the mineral industry, and all the school capital construction that you see is paid for by the mineral industry. And in order to keep people's taxes low, we've created this device.
Mr. Vice President, I'd like to recognize Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion by the Majority Floor Leader. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Yeah, I'll come back to it.
The question I have on the Common School Permanent Land Fund, clearly there's a big difference.
I'll talk about that. And I'm talking about that when you're back.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk for now.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 1:30.
Are there any announcements? Senator Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9 handles for at least 15 minutes after the 7th day of June to room that same meeting to continue the discussion on House Bill 144 and available to respond.
Other announcements? Other announcements? Seeing none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. We are at recess until 1:30 this afternoon. We are at recess.